Super Talk Mississippi Media Production.
This is Gerard Gibbert, and thank you for listening to Middays here on Super Talk Mississippi.
Middays with Gerard Gibbert is on the air. Middays with Gerard Gibbert is powered by C Spire. Power your home or business with C Spire fiber. To learn more, visit supertalk.fm/C Spire. C Spire fiber powers Super Talk Mississippi.
Get ready to go beyond the headlines and join a meaningful conversation with people from around the state. You're listening to Middays with Gerard Gibbert here on Super Talk Mississippi.
Everyone, and welcome to Midday Super Talk Mississippi. I'm your host, Gerard Gibbert, along with Rhino in the Element Wealth Studio, guiding you through the middle of your day with facts, fodder, and fine music. Morning there, Rhino.
Howdy, howdy.
All right, we're all strapped in, ready to go, and the president is going to be entertaining some dignitaries there at the White House. This afternoon, what's unusual about this is that they're all going to be piled into the Oval Office. That would be numerous leaders from the EU. And, of course, Volodymyr Zelensky. Think he's going to wear a suit this time?
I believe he was told that he has to.
Good. Well, they're going to be gathering up there in the White House in the Oval Office, trying to bring an end to this stupid war. The president, of course, as you know, met with Vladimir Putin on Friday. And both the president and Putin kind of claimed some degree of success, although really nothing that is tangible, I would say, at this point. I think that's why the president has called in Zelensky and leaders of the EU. I think that's a wise move. And, man, you got to give the president props and applaud him for working on this situation. He knows that it is causing lots of loss of life, primarily the problem, of course, with the fighting, and that there doesn't seem to be any imminent end in sight. The two countries, of course, still arguing about pieces of land and other assets and resources associated with that. So we'll see if some sort of agreement can be reached. If anybody could do it, it's the president. There's no doubt. The deal maker's deal maker. And again, you got to give him props. Even Hillary Clinton says if he can bring the war to an end, she's for nominating the president for a Nobel Peace Prize. You know, he said something to the effect, we'll have to start thinking about her differently if that happens. But they're all getting together, and it's going to be broadcast by the media. How are they going to get all those people in that room, the Oval Office? I mean, it's a big office.
Well, I mean, you got, what, the two-couch setup, so you got three. Yeah. I've seen pictures of meetings with a bunch of folks in there.
Well, and I guess the last time we saw it sort of crowded was right before the big, beautiful bill, right? And we had he had lots of representatives in there and members of the cabinet and the media, but this is going to be broadcast live. It's kind of unprecedented. Can you remember the assembly of so many world leaders broadcast live on television? I can't remember last time. I'm not talking about two. I mean, that's common. You get a couple of people. The president entertains a leader of a nation. But this is several.
Well, I mean, usually when you get this many people together that are quote-unquote dignitaries, what they have to talk about really isn't newsworthy enough to be live. Because, I mean, think of all the G7 and before that, the G8 summits.
Yeah.
They're all gathering together. They're all having meetings in very much the same way, but nothing they're talking about is really got the attention of anybody wanting to tune in live.
Yeah, I maybe that's it. I can't remember a live broadcast of amounts to a whole bunch of folks that are all leaders of their respective nations. Ursula von der Leyen, German Chancellor, European Commission President, Ursula von der Leyen, German Chancellor Friedrich Merz, French President Emmanuel Macron, British Prime Minister Keir Starmer, Italian Prime Minister Georgia Maloney. Remember, she rose to fame when she had to help Joe Biden find his way around Normandy. Remember that? Can you forget that? I can't get that vision out of my head with him just sadly stumbling around the American president near this hallowed ground, and she having to over this way here, Mr. President, is where you go. Remember that? And then NATO Secretary General Mark, I think it's Rutte is the way that his name is pronounced. They're all going to be in Washington today, along with Volodymyr Zelensky. So it's the U.S., it's European allies, and Volodymyr Zelensky, the Ukrainian president.
I think it's Volodymyr.
You're right, V-O-L-O. So is the O, that second O, kind of
Volodymyr. Okay. Almost like Voldemort.
Okay.
Harry Potter.
You don't pronounce the O before the D there? Balada, bala. Okay.
Not usually.
Okay.
I mean, I'm sure someone with a thick enough accent can, but with an American accent, you just kind of
roll through
that one, yeah.
But it's a VO, though. We should be clear about that. Unlike Putin, who's Vladimir, right?
Correct.
V-L-A-D. Yeah, this is Volodymyr. Yeah. You can tell I don't pronounce those names a lot. not an expert on that. But they're all gathered up for a broadcast, live broadcast. All the media that have been invited in will be providing a live record of that meeting, which is incredible. I mean, it really is. The automobile interest, I caught an article on that this weekend. That's something that's part of the big, beautiful bill. And it goes into effect. It's in effect now, so only certain vehicles qualify. This is the deductibility of it against your federal income taxes. And so that has gone into effect. It's only good for 3 years because everything expires at the end of 28. And I shouldn't say everything. This particular provision, just as the deductibility of tips and overtime income as well. They're short term, unfortunately, and they will expire at the end of 28. It's got to be an American-made vehicle for the interest to qualify. And this is going to be a nightmare, I'm sure, for the accountants trying to figure out if your vehicle qualifies. And then it's their income limitations. I think it's $100,000 for an individual and $200,000 for a married couple filing a joint tax return. And so I just thought that was interesting that it's another situation where it's temporary. And the reason it's temporary is because the reconciliation rules in the Senate, they're restrictive somewhat as far as budgetary changes. And to make this fit within those budgetary parameters, they being the Congress, had to terminate those provisions, those three that we just mentioned, taxes, overtime, tips, overtime, and automobile interest at the end of 28. So it's temporary. But take advantage of it while you can. It's kind of interesting that you're starting to see a lot of media reports about these provisions that many will certainly benefit from, those earning tip income, those earning overtime. And remember, the only overtime that's eligible is the premium part of your overtime. So if you get paid time and a half for overtime, then it's the half that is eligible for deduction against your taxes. The Mississippi Republican Party announced Friday that the State Central Committee has elected a new RNC committeeman for the state of Mississippi, endorsed by Governor Tate Reeves earlier this week. It's former Mississippi Republican Party Chairman Arnie Hederman, nominated by former Chairman Brad White. Of course, Brad, the executive director of the Mississippi Department of Transportation. And Arnie was elected by a unanimous vote of the Mississippi Republican Party. So this is a great selection in my view. Arnie will serve our state well as a committeeman for the Republican National Committee. And so he will be welcome for sure as a representative of the great state of Mississippi. Just wanted to get that out there in case you guys didn't know. This just all went down last week. Arnie Hederman, the new RNC committeeman from the state of Mississippi. Coming up next, it's Billy Taylor with the Mississippi Department of Rehabilitation Services and Dorothy Young, director of the Office of Vocational Rehabilitation for the Blind.
This segment of Middays with Gerard Gibbert is brought to you by Covington County Hospital in Collins, where your health matters.
Now back to Middays with Gerard here on Super Talk Mississippi.
Welcome back, everyone. It's Middays. We are live in the Element Wealth Studio. We're pleased to welcome now Billy Taylor, Mississippi Department of Rehabilitation Services Executive Director, and Dorothy Young, Director of the Office of Vocational Rehabilitation for the Blind. Billy, Dorothy, thanks for coming in.
Yeah, thanks for having us. Glad to be here.
So talk about this very exciting project, Downtown Jackson, the old Sun and Sand Hotel. What's going on there?
Yeah, so DFA bought the property, and they've turned it into some meeting space for state agencies to utilize. And we're fortunate enough to get to play a role in setting up the restaurant that's going to be there called the Hen and Egg. So we launched that last week. Dorothy and her program did a great job with that. So looking forward to seeing the Hen and Egg and the Sun and Sand prosperous for years to come.
So, Dorothy, tell us about the Hen and Egg. What's kind of unique about it? This is a restaurant that's founded or will have the chef, a famous chef, right, as part of this.
Yes, he's a famous chef right here from our great state of Mississippi, Mr. Nick Wallace. We all know Mr. Wallace, and he has a partnership already with our agency with the two museums. He is, if you ever visited our great museum, the two museums, if you eat in there, that you're eating from Mr. Nick Wallace.
Okay.
And that is a partnership with our agency, the Mississippi Department of Rehab Services. So he partnered with us before and has done a great job there. And so when DFA decided to revitalize this building, Sun and Sand, the priority goes to the state agency, the Mississippi Department of Rehab Services. For any state building, if you're going to put a cafeteria or vending, it goes to our agency for our blind vendors.
Okay.
And so they reached out to us probably about, 5 years ago, and we looked at the plans on this and the vision that they had for this. We chose Mr. Nick Wallace to carry it out because of his professionalism. Not to add that he does great cooking.
Yeah.
He is a renowned chef, and his professionalism, and that's what the blind entrepreneurship in food services does every single day in our great state.
Okay, so will there be blind entrepreneurs involved in this project?
They already are involved in the project. In any state building, if you see a vending machine, our cafeteria is operated by someone that's blind.
Okay.
You may not see them. You may see Subway operating that cafeteria. But that Subway person is working in partnership with a blind vendor. And what happens is it's kind of like a teaming partner is what we call it. The blind vendor gets to choose the teaming partner or the business that will run the day-to-day operations of it. And it's a contract that we put in place, and the blind person will get a certain percentage of it. The vending in that building or surrounding buildings in that area downtown will be operated by the blind vendor, and Mr. Wallace will be the one that's operating that cafeteria there, and then he'll pay a certain percentage to that vendor.
So one example that I viewed a video, and you guys got lots of great examples and do a good job of explaining and promoting that, is about Ed Turner, who's a vendor as part of the Business Enterprise Program, the BEP at MDRS. And he is involved in providing meals at the Naval Air Station, I believe, right? And in the video, he talks about that, and he talks about how this program made this possible. And so he's able to produce and contribute to society and utilize his special skills to feed people in this case and hire people. And he also credits his management team in the video about their contribution to his success.
Yeah, Mr. Turner, he plays a big role. He's the chairman of our Committee of Blind Vendors.
Okay.
And it really is such a cool law that sets this whole program up. But I think it was 1936 that it passed at the federal level. And it was basically two senators came together, and they wanted to give blind individuals the opportunity to operate vending and food sales on federally owned buildings. So it's called the Randolph-Shepard Act. About 10 years later, I think in the 1940s, is when Mississippi adopted what we call the mini Randolph-Shepard, which gives blind individuals that same priority on state-owned properties. So it's been, we have about 40 vendors in the program. It's been 90 years running nationally, and it just gives them that right to operate the food service. And they, I think it's probably originated from, you know, I believe those two senators were probably picturing, you know, individuals that are blind selling newspapers and Cokes at the bottom of the courthouse steps. But over the last 90 years, that has really expanded to major food service at military bases and, you know, prisons and, you know, just all kind of state and federally owned properties where you'll find a blind entrepreneur, you know, there providing that service.
Really?
And we have all three military in Mississippi. We have Keesler Air Force Base that's operated by Mr. Floyd Austin, who lives up in North Mississippi, right, Billy? Mm-hmm. Then we have Meridian that's operated by who you just mentioned, Mr. Eddie Turner. And then we have Camp Shelby, who's operated by Mr. Reverend Robert Cotton that lives in Madison County.
Wow, that's awesome. So if this program didn't exist and these opportunities weren't available to these blind vendors, these entrepreneurs, what would they be doing?
Well, our agency, the Randolph-Shepard program, falls up under what we call our Vocational Rehab for the Blind program. And what we do every day in the Office of Vocational Rehab for the Blind is help our fellow Mississippians who living with blindness or vision impairments find employment, right? So if they were not had not chose the self-employment entrepreneurship, we'll be finding them employment in whatever field.
Okay.
For instance, we closed over 308 fellow Mississippians in careers all across the state. We have them in nursing careers. We have them in computer engineering. We have them working at the Department of Transportation, state agencies, federal agencies, you name it. They get to choose that career, and the Vocational Rehab Agency for the Blind helps find those jobs.
Okay, but the program, my guess is, opens up opportunities that otherwise would not have existed, right?
Yes, sir.
That's the point.
Yes, sir.
And that you're just sort of the connector here, right? You're the liaison connecting them to these opportunities so that they can use their skills and thrive and serve others while
That's
they're
right.
doing it.
You know, it's really been some, you know, generational type impact that this law has had. There's one vendor that comes to mind. He operates a stand down on the coast, and he's down there filling vending machines every day down at Stennis. I think he has about 90 or 100 machines. And he told me a story one time that he remembers his parents being in the program when he was young, and he was doing the maintenance as a 10-year-old boy on vending machines before they even had electricity. So he was been an expert on operating vending for his whole entire life because of this program. And it's provided a good income for his family for generations because of this law. So it's really fun to be a part of it and see it grow and thrive. And we think, you know, things like this new hen and egg are just going to kind of keep the resources there to keep this program thriving.
So, Dorothy, you guys launched the Hen and Egg last week, right?
Yes, sir.
And I noted the list of attendees. I know it was a big event. How's it going so far?
Well, the word on the street is it's packed. So I've been getting reports back, and so they're saying, Miss Young, we stopped by, and it took us a long time to get our food because it's been packed. And so I said, I'm glad to hear that. And so it's really good. It's really good for downtown area.
Yeah.
Our colleagues at the Robert E. Lee Building said they were glad to have it there, and so we've been getting good reports back on it, and so. We want all of the listeners out there to please go downtown and eat at the Hen and Egg.
Yeah, that's pretty cool. And that's without the legislature being in session, because you know it'll be a favorite of lawmakers and staffs and so forth once they're back in the Capitol in January. And it's also just good to me. I mean, I grew up in West Jackson, and my father was a clothing representative of manufacturers. And he would actually show his line. He'd rent a room. That was a common thing. And the merchants would come from all over the state, and they'd come see his line in a room at the Sun and Sand, believe it or not. So,
yeah, we've heard a lot of cool stories about the Sun and Sand. I heard that that's where John Grisham wrote A Time to Kill, was in one of the motel rooms at Sun and Sand.
So it's neat to see that thing revitalized and really just, you know, back in business in some way, shape, or form. It's an iconic structure, and I guess it's a good thing it never got torn down, because now look at the good use it's been put to.
I just want to thank Department of Finance and Administration for just what you said, tearing it down. It was their vision to make sure that state employees had a place to eat, had a place to host trainings at and different things. So we just want to commend them for their leadership and helping get the Sun and Sand open again.
Yeah, it's awesome, isn't it? If you guys want to stick around, we got another segment that we can continue the discussion. You can talk about some of the other work that your agency's doing, and maybe share some of the other success stories. Are you good for that?
You good for that, yeah, Billy?
Sounds good.
We got Billy Taylor, Mississippi Department of Rehab Services Executive Director, and Dorothy Young, Director of Office of Vocational Rehabilitation for the Blind. We're coming right back.
You're listening to Middays with Gerard Gibbert, here on Super Talk Mississippi.
I never meant to be so bad to you. One thing I said that I would never do. A look from you and I would fall from grace, and that would wipe the smile right from my face.
Welcome back, everyone. Little Asia bumping us into this segment. We're visiting with Billy Taylor, Mississippi Department of Rehabilitation Services Executive Director, and Dorothy Young, Director of the Office of Vocational Rehabilitation for the Blind. So, we were just talking offline. So my wife, every now and then, listens. Monday's kind of a typical day for her to listen. And she just sent me something listening in. It reminded her of her childhood. She said, your segment on the blind vendors just reminded me of something. I would leave my aunt. She's actually named. Her name's Julie. She's actually named after her father's sister, her aunt. And her name's actually Juliet. And her aunt's name is Juliet. But so she said, my aunt Juliet. We'd leave my Aunt Juliet's and go walk up and see Dad in the afternoon, sometimes, and have a Coke. One of the places we would go was directly across the street to the post office, and there was a little convenience store concession stand in there. And the man actually behind the counter was blind, and I never knew it was because of this program.
Yeah, that's right. Like I said, it's been going on for 90 years. I mean, it's really grown over those 90 years. But, I think originally it was a lot of post office, a lot of courthouse steps, and just kind of, small vending items and newspapers, that sort of thing. I mean, now we're serving thousands of meals.
She said, thanks for the memory of me and my dad.
Yeah. And our first one, Billy, you are correct, was opened in the post office in Vicksburg. And that was, 1940?
Wow.
Yeah.
1940.
And my oldest vendor just passed not too long ago. He was in the program for over 55 years, and he was my, we called him our godfather of the Randolph Shepherd Program in Mississippi. He was there at the Mississippi State Hospital.
Wow.
And worked every single day.
Huh.
Yeah. And so he and his family, and a lot of the program involves a family. So you would have the vendor, and they have the family support. You would have their wife, their children, maybe the husband, and they help out. They provide the transportation, they help with the vending, help running the small entrepreneurial business. So, Billy, you are exactly right. It's generation.
Incredible.
So, yeah.
So what else is on the boards there, Dorothy? Because this, it sounds like you're off to a great start with this Hen and Egg project and the Sun and Sand downtown. What else you got cooking that you can tell us about today?
You ready, Billy?
You want to talk about the Emerge Center?
Let's talk about the Emerge.
Yeah, that's a new thing we have going on that's exciting. So we've always had, it's called the Addie McBride Center on UMC's campus.
Oh, yeah.
And that's a training facility
sure.
for individuals.
Familiar, yeah.
Yeah. And so we've had a push from the blind community over the past, 10 or 20 years maybe, to open up a different center that teaches how to navigate blindness a little bit differently, a little bit more independently. So we heard their feedback and recently launched a new center down on the coast called the Emerge Center. It's open in Long Beach. Probably open maybe
like, well, we're going up on our year now.
Okay.
Yeah, probably a year.
Yeah. Wow.
And it's a little different than Addie McBride. I mean, they learn how to navigate life in sleep shades, and it's total independence. Where, Addie, they'll use a little bit more family supports and, some other assistance. But down in Long Beach, they're learning total independence. So it's been really cool to see. We've had some interesting calls from the Long Beach police chief wondering why so many blind people are wandering around downtown
with sleep shades on and the long white canes. And so the Emerge Center, we open in Long Beach. We will like to thank our elected officials for helping us launch the Emerge Training Center. I think, Billy, we may be number 3 in the country for having 2 training centers for blindness that's operated by your state agency. Our first training center is located at University of Mississippi Medical Center, our Addie McBride Center, and our second one is the Emerge Training Center. The Emerge Training Center teaches our fellow Mississippians how to live blind. And what was happening before is our fellow Mississippians had to leave the state to learn how to live blind. The training is called structured discovery. And the philosophy of the training is that you can be fully independent and blindness does not define you.
Okay.
Right. And so they teach you how to live blind, because normally what happens is people lose their vision later in life, either from a progressive eye condition, diabetic retinopathy, macular degeneration, retinitis pigmentosa. Those are just some of your leading
causes. So not born with it necessarily.
Not born with
it. Okay.
And so once you get that diagnosis, usually people lose hope. Right. What we do is once you get that diagnosis and your doctor refers us to that agency, we immediately start preparing you to live independently.
Gotcha.
And so we do that by teaching you how to live blind. So you come to the training center in Long Beach. We have rented out apartments there. So you live in your own apartment while you go through the training. And once you get out your car, you put your sleep shades on, whether you're blind or not, and we give you a long white cane, and your training begins that particular day.
So, Dorothy, the blind people that the Office of Vocational Rehabilitation for the Blind serves, which you are the director of, Do they find you or do you find them? How do you guys get together?
Both ways. Our biggest referral are, you know, word of mouth. And the second is our local ophthalmologists around our great state.
Okay.
University of Mississippi Medical Center, we have a great working relationship with them. Dr. Crawford, Dr. Wan, they refer to us all day, every day. Mississippi Retina, just leading ophthalmologists and optometrists around the state. They refer to us. And once they send us that eye report over, we have 18 counselors that set up all across the state. And those counselors reach out to the clients, and they start an application with them immediately. We serve over 1,700 Mississippians a year.
Wow. Mm-hmm. 1,700.
Mm-hmm.
So you've often heard that when someone is without one of their senses, that God tends to equip them or intensify them with across their other senses. Mm-hmm. Has that been your experience in working with blind people?
I will tell you that one thing that I have heard that, but I will tell you that they have a strong sense of faith.
Interesting.
They have a strong sense of faith. To get up every morning, and blindness, and this is what I tell folks all the time. They say, what is blindness? Blindness is no light perception. We are only able to see with light. Light comes in at the back of the eye. When light comes in at the back of the eye, that's how you're able to see. So when you're blind, no light is coming in. So they're in darkness all day. So when they have the ability to get up every morning, blind, in darkness, get ready for work, call their driver, and go out to a job, I tell them that is a sixth sense. It's a sixth sense called faith.
Yeah, it's mm-hmm. good way to put it. Mm-hmm. I totally agree. And do you find that they want to be productive, they want to contribute, they want to integrate and assimilate into society, but that they recognize the difficulty of that, but they're willing to do what's necessary to overcome it? Has that been your experience?
Most definitely. And they would tell you, we don't ask for a handout. They don't want you to feel sorry for them. They don't ask for a handout. They said that we don't ask for a handout. We ask for a hand up. And that's why they get up every morning and go to work.
Okay.
And they were very excited about Mr. Nick Wallace partnering with them, because Nick Wallace appearance, his good cooking and his appearance on Top Chef nationally. They said, Dorothy, that's how we are. It's the type of people we represent in our state.
Billy, besides those who are blind, whom else does your agency serve?
So on the workforce side of our agency, you know, Dorothy's over the blind side, and then we also have a vocational rehabilitation side that handles any other disability. So the state legislature, you know, kind of carved out the blind services office a few decades ago, but we've been, you know, operating the voc rehab side for decades as well. And that's, you know, anybody that has a substantial impediment to reaching an employment goal because of their disability. So any other disability out there, we can provide whatever services are necessary to get them over those obstacles that their disability is, you know, producing to have them, you know, reach their ultimate employment goal.
And does the agency have offices across the state?
We do. We have about 45 offices across the state and maybe 200 counselors or so located in those 45 offices. So we try to have them, you know, pretty geographically symmetrical where people can get to one pretty easily. And, you know, that's what we do. We try to get individuals that have a disability into the workforce or keep them in the workforce. I mean, oftentimes we serve people that are currently working and have a job and they have some disability that's gotten worse over the years, and we help them overcome those obstacles.
Yeah. That's awesome. Well, it sounds exciting, and really I feel like that with the Sun and Sand, the Hen and Egg project, that not only are you helping out people that need this hand up, as you say, Dorothy, but you're turning this old iconic Sun and Sand landmark into something that's actually productive there instead of just an idle building.
Yes, and I want all of our listeners to know, all of our entrepreneurs, blind vendors, are Mississippi taxpayers.
Yeah.
They paid back $17 million in taxes in our state.
Wow, mm-hmm. I appreciate that. Billy Taylor, MDRS Executive Director, and Dorothy Young with the Vocational Rehabilitation for the Blind have been our guests here on Middays. Appreciate you guys coming in. We're coming right back, folks, in the Element Well studio.
On November 4th... You're listening to Middays with Gerard here on Super Talk Mississippi.
Bum 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 bum, I feel free. Bum 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 bum, I feel free. Bum 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 bum, I feel free. Bum 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 bum, I feel free. Bum 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 bum, I feel free. Bum 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 bum, I feel free. Bum 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 bum, I feel free.
We're back with you in the Element Wealth studio. We appreciate you joining us today. And a fascinating discussion there with Billy Taylor from the Mississippi Department of Rehabilitation Services, Dorothy Young, the Office of Vocational Rehabilitation for the Blind. There's one thing for sure. They're passionate about it. And Dorothy, of course, this was mostly about this work that's being done in this new restaurant out at the Sun and Sand.
The Hen and Egg.
The Hen and Egg, right. And so this is more about the rehabilitation of the blind aspect of the overall agency. And that's why I wanted Billy to talk about some of the other initiatives they have and other stakeholders that they serve. But you can tell she's super passionate about it, which is what it takes, because you're dealing with a very challenging situation. And if there's a way we can make people in society productive. So I give you an example. You know this. Medicaid. You're eligible for Medicaid if you're blind, right? Well, if you're running a successful restaurant, you don't actually need Medicaid. You can afford to have better insurance than Medicaid. And your employees would want that as well if you're an entrepreneur. I mean, this is an example of how we can extend that hand up, not just a handout. We got too many handouts. There's no doubt about that. But these are people who want to contribute to society. And there's no doubt they're limited because of their disability. In this case, it's blindness.
Like, for example, we got a question on the C Spire text line from the 601. And I'm not a subject matter expert, but I did go down this particular rabbit hole because I had the same curiosity. They said, just curious, how do the blind tell the difference between a 1, a 5, a 10, or a $20 bill? And there's a myriad of different methodologies that they use. Anything from working with their bank to assist them when they are handing them their currency to say the denomination, and then they mark it either with a little stamp they have on their keychain that imprints Braille dots for the corresponding number onto the bill itself so they can feel it, or they might fold the bills differently where, say, a $1 bill doesn't get folded, a $5 bill gets folded in half, a $10 bill gets folded caddy call, like stuff like that. And the I just went blank on the name of it. It's the BEP, the Bureau of Engraving and Printing, I think.
Yeah.
They actually will give you, if you are an eligible blind person, they will give you this thing called an iBill. It's a little piece of tech that you can carry in your pocket, and you put it on the corner of a bill, and it's got different modes. It can read out the denomination of the bill out loud, or if you want a little bit more privacy, it can do beeps and boops for different denominations, or it can vibrate. So, like, if it vibrates five times, that's a fiver. If it vibrates 10 times, it's probably not 5, 10, 20 times, because that would be a little tedious to count out 20s that way. But
yeah,
that's how technology has been implemented and is available without cost to a blind individual to help with something that you take for granted with sight, such as counting your money.
Yeah, that's a good point. And, you know, you made me think about simple technology, if it's part of a cashing out process, could also address that issue. You stick your currency, your coins in the machine. It knows what your bill is, and it comes back. I mean, there are all kinds of ways of dealing with that today. But what you described is kind of pre that sort of technology that works. I mean, it's just real simple, like the folding and the marking and things like that. That makes total sense. But again, overcoming those various obstacles of being blind so that a person can contribute and utilize their God-given talents to do so. And you know it pumps them up. And I did watch that video of Ed Turner, who I had no idea is overseas serving meals at the Naval Air Station in Meridian. And it's quite the operation. And it's a pretty big operation. I didn't realize how many people in the Navy and I guess other forms of the government are stationed there and are part of that, and there's a cafeteria on the base, and they eat, and this guy serves them, man. His team does, his company. Really neat. It's part of this vendor program. It just makes total perfect sense to me. So, what we got to work on are the people in society, Rhino, that don't want to work. That's the problem we have. And we have somehow built this attitude through the years, mainly stemming from the left. Oh, no, you're
the safety
blocked
net
out.
Became a hammock.
That's exactly right. That's a good way to put it. And that's not the way it was supposed to. But we've sort of induced this attitude of I'm just going to sit back and let somebody else take care of me when you could get out work and you don't have any disabilities. Fox News, Super Talk News, and then an hour of a middays.
Middays with Gerard Gibbert is brought to you by the Mississippi Business Journal. Visit msbusinessjournal.com. Scott Coopwood, publisher and president.
Welcome to the show that challenges you to think deeply, and look beyond political posturing. You're listening to Middays with Gerard Gibbert here on Super Talk Mississippi.
Welcome back, everyone. It is middays. We are live in the Element Well studio. It's Monday. That means it's Super Talk Outdoors with Ricky Matthews at 12:05. Looking at a live shot of the White House at 12:06 Eastern time. And there's the Marines and other members of the U.S. Armed Forces. It looks like flanking the main road there, Rhino, and they're spaced apart, hoisting it. Looks like our flag and the flags of the leaders, the nations of the being represented by their leaders today in this meeting. So they are awaiting the arrival of these European leaders, and Volodymyr Zelensky should be arriving at the White House any moment, a 2:00, right, Eastern time event is what's on tap today. So we're inside an hour of when this thing starts with the press in the Oval Office with these leaders.
Yeah, but it's a meeting with the press in D.C., so you know it's going to start at least 15 minutes late.
That's probably right. Oh, man. That's probably right. Not like Joe Biden, who is perennially late. And I don't mean that on an annual basis. I mean that on a constant basis.
There's a difference in making sure you've got the right line in the speech to acknowledge the right person in the right order compared to, wake him up! Shoot him up with whatever you got to. Just get him on his feet. Man. We're already 45 minutes late.
You know, it seems like decades ago that those scenarios, but it was less than a year ago this was going on. It's just hard to believe this country was being run by someone who was just lacking the mental acuity.
Well, in fairness, it was more than a year ago, because less than a year ago, he had already been pretty much memory-holed. The media had just stopped talking about him.
Yeah, that's true. But
the rare occurrence of the lame duck one-term president.
Yeah, that's a good point. That doesn't happen very often. But he kind of was, you're right, when the media sort of folded on him, they wilted on him, and you didn't hear a whole lot about
it. When they realized they could no longer convince the people that their lying eyes were lying to them.
And now they're quick to say, yeah, we kind of thought something was going on. No, you weren't. You never gave any indication of any concern. In fact, you defended him. He's sharp as a tack and all that kind of stuff. So...
Certainly was it Morning Joe talking about, this is the best version of Biden I've ever seen.
Yeah, that's right. Scarborough. So true. So one thing that, again, I'll point out about the president is that the man works without quit. I mean, tirelessly. And so there are reports that he was working 20 hours straight, including Friday's meeting with Putin, and then after that, on the phone with European leaders. You guys got to come to Washington. We're going to get Zelensky. We got to figure something out. So 20 hours straight. Now, I saw other reporters on the left. You probably saw this. Man, he sure did look old. You see all these kind of smears. And it's like...
Now they have the journalistic integrity to attack an old president.
Exactly. But, well, he's 79, right? So aren't you supposed to look a little old at 79? But he's performing and behaving as he was, as if he was 20 years younger, at minimum, to work 20 hours straight at 79. That is unusual. And I do think, there's no doubt, his heart's in the right place. He wants to end this war. I caught a video, by the way, that after this meeting with Putin, of course, he's getting back on Air Force One. And, you know, no matter what, he stops and has a little interaction with the members of our armed forces that are there for him, of course, because he's the commander-in-chief. And they're there for security and anything else that is needed to conduct transportation for the president and their entourage. That's the way it should be. But there's a video that I'm looking at right now where he, of course, as he steps on to the steps there that takes him on Air Force One, it's always flanked by service members who are saluting at attention. Head and eyes straight ahead. Of course, he always salutes them. But you can't see on the tarmac a few feet away. There's always members of the armed forces that are there as well. He, without failure, stops and interacts with them. And in this case, you can see him doing so. I'm looking at it right now. This is from Friday. And he stops, and it's members of the Air Force, in this case. And it's two males and a female in their dress blues, Air Force blues. He stops in the middle and looks at them and salutes them. And then after they salute, he engages with each of them individually. Just small talk, shaking their hands. That's what a president should do. And he does that. It almost felt like the Democrats under Joe Biden, and even prior to that, it's like they were embarrassed about the armed forces, even though he would always end his little speeches with God bless our troops. It didn't feel like that was sincere, genuine, because so many in his party, it's like they put illegal aliens ahead of members of our armed forces that sacrifice by wearing this country's uniform. Is there anybody else that deserves our gratitude more than them? Than the president of the United States? I think not. But they always distance themselves from the members of our armed forces. And you may not like everything the armed forces does. But you know what? The chain of command has to be respected. And they do what they're told. And they join understanding, I got to do what I'm told. And sometimes it may be stuff you don't like. That's the real world, and that's the way it has to be, because otherwise we end up like these corrupt foreign banana republic regimes that don't have squat. In fact, their armed forces, if you think about it, they're more about defending the life of their corrupt dictator than they are the people in the country. Am I reading this wrong? I really do feel that way sometimes. Like, all these people, oh, they're here to protect this one idiot and defend them from threats. I don't know. It just struck me, but I as an American, I want to see the president assert himself as the leader of the most powerful nation on the planet. That's what America's role is in the world. That hasn't changed.
But you can't score brownie points with the perpetually aggrieved and always offended if you're touting the successes of this great nation.
That's just horse hockey, man. And they, it's, I'm embarrassed for them that they're idiots, honestly. That, again, always dwelling on the negative. I got into a little social media exchange this weekend, and it's, this was a video from a young white guy that obviously is a liberal, and he's talking about how all of our freedoms have been lost in the last 9 months. Like, exactly what? What freedoms have been lost? What are they talking about? But the more I listen to this three-minute video, this diatribe, it's another example of, you're in 1865. It's 2025. And then so this one individual, and I said that, and I said, get into 2025 here. Well, should we just forget about history? No, I didn't say that. But you know what? You're only focused on that piece of history and not all the other history that ensued after that to rectify those sins, those mistakes. Anybody that says that hasn't happened is just an idiot and wants to dwell on that for personal gain. That's what I felt like. It's what happened in the whole 2020 BLM riot crap, all about the George Floyd deal, everything that came out of that. It's like, you know, maybe you guys need to take stock up. Does that mean it's perfect? No. Weren't we told, don't we acknowledge that that we're constantly in search of the perfect union? We get that. We acknowledge that. But don't we also have to recognize the improvements that have been made, the progress? They don't want to, right? They don't want to.
Because they can't grift off of it.
I hate it, man. I really do. Well, we're coming right back in the Element Well studio.
Middays with Gerard Gibbert.
Let's do this.
On Super Talk Mississippi.
Let's go.
We're back with you in the Element Well studio. Oh, geez, our old buddy Robert Reich. He's at it again. This time, he's got a video. He loves to go out there on his Inequality Media. That's the name of his entity, his group. And he says in the video, in the time you spend watching this video, Jeff Bezos will earn more than what the majority of full-time American workers earn in a year. Say it with me, tax the rich. And he goes on to feature shots of his extravagant wedding that he just had. Overseas somewhere. Where did he have it? Somewhere they flew the whole group over. And he says, if he can afford this extravagant wedding, he can afford to pay more taxes. I just don't understand this misguided obsession.
Venice, Italy.
Okay, that's right. It was Venice. It looked like everybody had a lovely time. And I want so desperately.
The wedding has its own Wikipedia page.
That's awesome. Somebody went and chronicled the event, right? Wrote an account, I'm sure, with all the details.
The wedding took place in Venice on June 27th, 2025, with the couple exchanging vows at the Basilica of San Giorgio Maggiore.
That's so cool.
On the island of the same name.
So does it discuss any of the features, the trappings?
As part of the celebrations included a party themed around the Great Gatsby, a pajama party, and a foam party. The bride-to-be reportedly had 27 outfits for the extended nuptials.
Love it. And, of course, they had boating, I think, as well, and lots of parties and galas and festivities.
The mayor of Venice was praising the fact that the event would bring, quote, bring economic returns of millions of euros, end quote, to the city.
You just stole my thunder. You knew that. But that, of course, requires a second-order thinking, as you like to point out.
A knee-jerk reaction?
You think Wright gets that?
No.
How many people just literally attained generational wealth from Bezos' wedding? He don't get that, does he? Where does he think...
Which is embarrassing, considering his line of work.
That's true.
Either he doesn't get it, which should be embarrassing, or he's intentionally misleading, which should anger people that actually care about the truth.
Unbelievable.
Including those naysayers that like to say that we just lie, lie, lie. And if you really cared about the truth, you'd be calling out your own side, dummies.
So one of the comments on this post, if he can rent Venice for his wedding, he can pay fair taxes. That got 1,600 likes with 271 replies. That's the way these people think. And I submit he pays more than his fair share of taxes. I know that may be an unpopular thing to say, but when you consider his income and the amount of taxes he pays and the fact that we've pointed out so many times, the top 1% pay 46% of the taxes in this country. And that's not fair to them. And the top 1% actually pay more than the bottom 90. You have to get above 90% to get to the taxes paid by the entire population as a whole relative to the 1%, just in terms of the value. But it's as you point out, it's never enough. It doesn't matter.
Well, another example of the left's seeming inability to apply second or third order thinking skills. One of their most recent suggestions is a 100% inheritance tax.
Unbelievable.
As if if that got implemented, people wouldn't just spend all of their money instead of just giving it to Uncle Sam when they passed.
Yeah, and it's a disgusting thought. It's class warfare. It's envy. This little fool is envious. I truly do believe that. Robert Reich, though he's an accomplished person, let's be honest. I don't care for his accomplishments, but if you served in the cabinet of the United States, that's a pretty big deal.
But considering what he's espousing, it's obvious he didn't serve very well if he can't comprehend simple stuff.
I completely agree. Don't get me wrong. I don't like what he accomplished.
But then again, there are members of state legislatures and people roaming the halls of Congress that are too stupid to pour you-know-what out of a boot with instructions on the heel.
That's true. He just goes on to say it's not radical to want a wealth tax without recognizing that everywhere that's been implemented, including in Europe, it was a disaster, and they reversed it. And Europe hadn't met a tax they don't like for the most part. I came across some more stories just in doing some research for the show this weekend that got into some stuff you've talked about before, just made me think Europe and healthcare and the outrageous delays. The National Institute of Health, the UK, you've probably seen this. They're on the verge of crashing. They're pipe dream utopia of socialized medicine where the government literally owns the delivery of health care is on the verge of completely cratering. Not only is the service terrible, I mean, literally people die. I'm not just taking that line from the left in this country that wants you to believe that you could just drive into any major American city and see people dying on the streets because they were denied health care. And that's not happening in this country. That is not happening in this country. They've never produced any evidence of that. It's just a popular talking point. In the EU, in the UK, in Canada, it is. And now they're given even more options for terminating your life and all this kind of crap because, like, we don't want to take care of you anymore. And these are complicated ethical, moral, economic, legal matters. Point I'm making is it's not the utopia that the left in this country thinks it is. You've pointed it out many. You've actually provided some examples, like you go and you figure out that you got a cancerous polyp in your colon. You need surgery. Okay, we'll get to you in a year. You're going to die probably before then, right? You pointed out stuff like that. That's the truth. In this country, that doesn't happen, despite the fact that we have extremely tight supply and demand of a lot of these services. It just doesn't happen. I can't think of a single person that said, yeah, I died because they just couldn't do surgery on me. They couldn't treat me further. And the other thing, we've made such advances in many of these treatments, all of which originated here, came out of this country. Why? Because somebody got financially rewarded for inventing them. It's exactly what happens. And we're healthier because of it. We live longer lives because of it. The only reason our life expectancy in this country isn't going up the way it should is because so many of our people just live unhealthy lifestyles. Just won't take care of themselves. And it's just so much medicine can do, right? And I don't mean to be lecturing those people, but right here in the state of Mississippi, where we have an extremely unhealthy population, it's mostly driven by the person. It's not because they're inheriting a disease as a matter of genetics. Sure, that happens, but how much of that's exacerbated because they just won't take care of themselves? We got to change that, man. We got to change it here in Mississippi. And I know that's a kind of completely different subject matter, kind of off on that, but I just marvel at all these people, such as Reich, and it just seems like since the reconciliation bill passed, people are coming out of the woodwork, as you know, talking about this income inequality stuff. And I guess all I could say is if you're mad that Jeff Bezos got rich, put your damn phone down and quit using it because that's what made him rich. And you look at me and say, what do you mean by that? Where do you think all that data is? Not all of it, but you know this. A good many of those apps you use, they're all stored in Amazon's cloud across the world. And that's where all the income comes from. And guess what? All the innards, all the other tools and the components that are necessary to build that capability, a lot of those people got wealthy too. And the reason is because virtually everyone on the planet uses it. I think last I checked, more people have smartphones than electricity in this, right? In the world. They're like these sharing places to charge your phone in some of these third world. You're saying you know exactly what I'm talking about. But they've got ubiquitous Wi-Fi, right?
Yeah, there are pictures of like a shepherd in Mongolia looking at an iPad while he's got an oil lantern providing light.
We're stepping aside for a break. Half an hour of middays remains. Down on the corner, out in the street, when the bump was a plane, bringing you some happy feet. Down on the corner, out in the street, when the bump was a plane. From the
middays with Gerard Gibbert.
It is on.
On Super Talk, Mississippi.
Back with you in the Element Well studio. So when I was talking earlier about how the left in this country seems to want to distance itself from the United States military, and they seem to give more deference to the illegals in this country or criminals in this country, particularly where race is involved.
I'd be willing to bet the majority of the lawmakers that have shown their butt in public and tried to go viral by, well, they won't let me in this detention center.
That's right.
Haven't visited an army base in their entire political career.
That's so true. And that's sad. You know, I've got Reagan's book that I can't remember the exact name, but it's his diaries. It's like a collection of his diaries. And one of the first things he did was held a dinner at the White House, one in his first term when he was elected, for members of the armed forces. And I'm talking about the rank and file. I don't know how they went about selecting that. But he said that during the entire, in his diary, that during the entire Carter administration, the administration prior to his, of course, he never had any members of the armed forces in the White House. And I think even back then, he was a person that just kind of always looked negatively on the Department of Defense and those who served their country in uniform. I sent you video of someone who on TikTok, right? You saw that? Who's calling for the execution. I think this was, as I recall, was this the execution of those in Washington that the president has deployed?
Yeah.
And, I mean,
Law enforcement in D.C.
Yeah, that's what I thought. So she doesn't hold back. I mean, literally in this TikTok video, implores people, go out and execute these law enforcement officers. And I maintain that that attitude really was fomented by the left, the leaders on the left in this country that do see that way. More about coddling and I guess victimizing the criminals themselves than they are about the actual victims. What about the Indian truck driver that didn't know what the heck he was doing? Was this in Florida? Made a U-turn?
Yeah, they made an illegal U-turn and it killed a family of three, and now it's come out that they gained entry to the country illegally in 2018 and were given a CDL by California.
Why are we giving CDLs to people who...
Because California's crazy.
That's really bad, in my view. I just thought it was bad that this person commits this crime. And it seemed to be people coming to his defense, even. I've seen that. And clearly, he didn't know what he was doing. Really, he's not qualified to drive, period, probably. Didn't we just have to pass some law or something that says you got to be able to speak English before you drive a vehicle? I mean, I had no idea you could get a driver's license without being able to speak English.
Well, one of the other workarounds is for Mexican truck drivers. The law permits them to cross from Mexico into the U.S. to drop off a load. And then they're supposed to immediately exit the U.S. back to Mexico.
Okay.
Well, they don't. They'll come over and find somewhere to hole up for 6 months to a year and continue taking loads across the U.S. with a Mexican license plate and a Mexican driver's license, but seemingly no ability to speak English, understand the laws of the road, and lack of care about the immigration laws.
Just unbelievable. So I think all that can be reduced down to this – again, this prioritization and this deference paid by the left to illegals over law-abiding American citizens. And that's what the left doesn't get, that people are sick of, including people that vote Democrat. because the polls wouldn't reflect the way they do if it didn't include some Democrats that feel that way. Well, I think the tide is turning on that. Dan in Hattiesburg on the C Spire text line says, will they have a kid's table set up for Zelensky? That's a good one. I just saw MSNBC will be changing their name later this year. They could go with CBN, the Communist Broadcast Network. Any other suggestions? That's for Mose. Yeah, so they're going to what? MS Now, right? That was announced, and that sort of overlaps something, some branding here in the state of Mississippi. We talked about that in our meeting this morning. I woke up to gunfire at the SNS before going to MEPS. What's that about?
We're talking about the sun and sand.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Right. That's when we were discussing that. Yeah, that's. I hate to hear that. Terrible. And I hope that Mayor John Horn will address the crime issue, which is arguably the number one issue in the capital city of Jackson. And it's not a good thing when we're, what, right behind Memphis, I think. Memphis is the murder capital of the country. That's not good. And we're top two or three as well on a per capita basis, and that's not a good thing. Paula Meridian says, I believe the Bible says not to covet your neighbor's property. Yeah, I agree. And those who earn substantial wealth, again, by serving society, doing it legitimately and legally, and because people thought so much of what they produce that they're willing to part with their money for it, that means they believe they get value from it, and one is enriched from that, that's nothing but good. I mean, what's bad about that? It's why we have the quality of life we do today. So Friday, I thought about this. I was invited to attend an event at the Pentecostal church in Madison. A good friend of mine actually runs a church. He and I go way back from the baseball world when our sons played ball together. And he invited me to attend as his guest. And I'm always impressed, of course. But they bring in missionaries, those that are trying to get churches started across the country and actually in other outside of the country as well. They literally bring them in to help them along that path. Does this congregation, the UPC in Madison. And they brought in a preacher in one of their churches in Virginia. And he was fabulous. But he made this point that I found interesting that I totally agree with. He said, you know, I hear a lot of people talk about I long for the good old days. And he said, no, I don't. And he started describing what life was like in the good old days. You know, like before running water and air conditioning and heat.
And penicillin.
Yeah, and lots of other things that we're accustomed to today. He said, no, we don't want to return to the good old days. Now, I know that when that statement's made, a lot of people think more in terms of our values and our traditional values. And I agree with him in that respect. There's some aspects of that I would like to see reinvigorated as well. But just bring that forward and leave all the other stuff behind. But again, what impresses me the most about the United Pentecostal Church and anytime they have events like that, they're just so optimistic. They're so upbeat. They're so positive. They're so focused on the future and how the future's going to bring better lives. And they believe it's God's plan. I do, too. And it always impresses me, man. And I came away, as always, just inspired and motivated and upbeat and optimistic. So I applaud them for that. I really do. And the way they also involve the young people as well, I applaud them for that. You know, it's a Friday night, and that's where they are for 3 hours as opposed to getting involved in stuff that may not be as productive. Really like that. Tim from Tupelo says, and if you're a corporation like Amazon, you're actually double taxed, laugh out loud. Well, that's right. I mean, you pay corporate taxes, and then whatever's left over that, of course, gets paid out is also taxed. So the problem with the left in this country is that they believe tax policy, and I've actually seen some people on the right say this as well, should be structured on the basis of how much one can afford. That's just wrong. We already have a ridiculously progressive tax policy, more so than any other country. And all that means is that the more you make, the more you pay. We already have that. It's been ingrained in our tax codes since we've been paying taxes. Tax policy should be made such that we generate the minimum amount of revenue necessary to support the constitutionally appropriate functions of government. And I know that that last caveat, you could spend months arguing, what is the constitutionally appropriate function of government? It ain't a lot of stuff we spend money on. Final segment's next.
Poly up of Mississippi.
Are we going to do this?
Middays with Gerard Gibbert.
Keep rolling. 3, 2, 1.
On Super Talk Mississippi.
Welcome back, everyone. Final segment of Midday. So on the ceasefire text line, I was talking earlier about Reagan, who in his book that I have, The Reagan Diaries, talked about bringing in some members of the armed forces to the White House for a dinner and said that that didn't happen under the Carter years. On the ceasefire text line, Carter was a veteran of the Naval Nuclear Submarine Force, of the Cold War graduate of the Naval Academy. I really don't think he was anti-military. That was a weird time post-Vietnam. And you could be right, by the way, to pronounce it the way the former President Carter did. It'd be nuclear, right? Nuclear. You could be right. Knowing Carter and kind of observing Carter, it's just something he probably just didn't think about. And that's fine. So I just found it interesting that it was one of the first moves that Reagan made.
But it's that very service in nuclear submarines that angers me about Carter because of his unwillingness to quiet the fears of those after Three Mile Island.
That's true. That's a good
point.
He
knew full well there was little to no danger, but he couldn't bring himself to tell the world that because it wasn't politically expedient.
Yeah, that's exactly right. Totally agree. Now, you do have to credit the fact that he never sent an American serviceman into war. Not one died in a war-fighting scenario under Carter. He was extremely passive, and I respected that and was a champion for peace. And he'll talk about all the Camp David meetings, trying to patch things up in the Middle East and stuff like that. But he just always appeared to, like, be stressed and a little uneasy and unsure and not assertive to me. I think he was generally a good person. But, man, when he went and addressed the nation, I'll never forget this, Rhino, and you could look me up on it, when he said that he made some reference to little Amy, and the one thing that kept Amy up at night was the prospect of nuclear war. And I don't know if that was the best way to... And there's no doubt the Cold War post-Vietnam era, and that's what the individual said on our text line, was it a difficult time, and there was massive buildup of armed forces by Russia, who was considered the biggest threat, the evil empire, as we referred it. And Reagan came in and said, I'm going to break their back economically, and he did. And then the wall came down, but we spent a lot of money doing that. But the military had really matured, shall we say, and it was in need of modernization and improvement, and it had become somewhat dilapidated. And I remember reading reports about the various military assets that Russia had during the period when I was in college, and what we had, and they outpaced us in every single category. And that was a concern. And they were spending an enormous amount of their GDP on just that, with it certainly appeared to be the intention of taking over this country. I mean, I do think that, just like China has that aspiration today, I believe. On the C-Spire text line, I'm a truck driver and meet non-speaking drivers all the time. That's disturbing. I don't know. Am I overreacting there? That just seems to be a problem.
I mean, put yourself in the shoes of driving in a country where you don't understand the language on the road signs. You'd have a difficult time getting around. Now imagine you're hauling a load in a big rig.
I can't imagine it. It's hard enough just in a standard passenger consumer vehicle, right? Just 2 weeks of no internet or anything digital and back to only analog across the entire USA would have many people going out of their minds. I was just talking about returning to the good old days and certainly some of the more traditional values. And for me, it's a time when the nuclear family was more sacred, and then we had more people that were obviously staying together as a family and raising children that turned out to be productive children as adults. Yeah, I do. I miss those days, and I'd like to see a return to that. So I can't find it now. I seem to have lost it. But I caught a video on Twitter by a Methodist minister who basically was encouraging people to divorce from the pulpit if things weren't working out for them. I don't remember the exact language. I lost it in my Twitter here, but I thought that was kind of interesting that a minister of a church like that was actually encouraging people to divorce.
Yeah, it was a minister with the United Methodist Church named Ryan Scott.
Okay, there you go. I don't know. Seems a little weird. I think it's just the opposite. You know, work it out, man. And if you don't rush into it, make sure it's the right thing to do. No doubt about it. I'm a regional truck driver, and I see foreign drivers that can't speak English on a daily basis. You guys are worrying me. So no wonder this incident happened. There's another video going around of a lady driving a truck that's on her phone. Have you seen this? And just runs over a bunch of stuff and then gets right back on her phone. We're out of here today. Back tomorrow. Stay safe and God bless.
A Super Talk Mississippi Media Production.